Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a decision by the DC Court of Appeals that broke with 150 years of precedent striking down President Obama's use of recess appointments. Azeez Haque, Professor of Law at the University of Chicago, joins us to discuss this radical decision in the context of the growing rightward tilt of our judiciary from successful efforts by Republicans to filibuster Democratic nominees to the federal bench. On top of using legislative trickery to hobble federal agencies Republicans don't like, this latest display of conservative judicial activism now prevents a Democratic president from getting around Republican roadblocks. Then we'll look into filibuster reform that appears to have fizzled in the Senate, where a watered-down version has been agreed to. We will look into what kind of reform can be expected and what more could have been achieved, with a veteran of the Senate, Ira Shapiro, who was counsel to the majority leader of the U.S. Senate. We will discuss the enormous backlog of bills and appointments created by the unprecedented use of the filibuster by Republicans and how much these reforms will unblock the Senate. Then finally, we will examine the U.S.'s increased reliance on drones and recent efforts by the U.N. to launch an inquiry into the proliferation of drones now used by 51 countries and the lack of a legal framework of international law to deal with this new weapon. Richard Rubenstein, the University Professor of Conflict Resolution and Public Affairs at George Mason University, joins us. He is the author of Reasons to Kill, Why Americans Choose War. Joining us now is Azeez Haque, who is a professor of law at the University of Chicago. He's a former clerk for Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the Supreme Court and is the co-author of Unchecked and Unbalanced Presidential Power in a Time of Terror. Azeez Haque, welcome to Background Briefing.
Hi, Ian. Thank you for having me on the show.
And this break with 150 years of precedent that's just taken place with the decision by the D.C. Court of Appeals who have struck down the use of recess appointments in relation to the National Labor Relations Board and the new Consumer Protection Agency. First of all, given the work that you've done on unchecked and unbalanced presidential powers in a time of terror, there is obviously a striking irony here that conservative justices seem to bend over backwards to give president the power to use drones, to use Guantanamo, and to have limited powers, if you will, in terms of even killing U.S. citizens. But at the same time, they seem to be taking away at least this president's power to do recess appointments, which, again, is 150 years of precedent out the window.
I think you're absolutely right to say there's an irony. The decision last week turned on exactly when the Senate is in recess. And the court, the D.C. Circuit, took a very narrow view of what constitutes a recess adequate for the triggering of the president's constitutional power to make appointments in during a recess. There is a long history, as many people have noted in response to the decision, of presidents making recess appointments, and it's certainly not clear that that power has, as a historical matter, been limited to instances in which the Senate is absolutely and entirely out of session, as opposed to in some sort of hiatus within the session. And that's what's at issue here. And the aggressive reading of the recess power appointment against the president is, as you say, ironic, coming from a court, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the intermediate court that sits in Washington, D.C., and that hears a lot of cases about federal regulatory policy. This is a court that is known to be quite conservative. It has some very well-known conservative judges on its bench, including Judge David Santel, who was the author of last week's decision in respect to the NLRB.
But again, back to the broader issue of the unlevel playing field, the extent to which Republicans have used the filibuster to prevent Democrats from appointing judges to the federal bench. And nobody has more of a backlog than President Obama, from my understanding. He's way down compared to previous presidents in the number of of appointees he's managed to get on the judiciary. So you have this situation where the Republicans have created the roadblocks, and then now they've found a way to create another roadblock, which is meant to get around the first roadblock.
Well, this decision is really important with respect to federal agencies like the National Labor Relations Board and the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which you mentioned, where the Senate, and in particular the Republican minority in the Senate, has used the filibuster power. It's also used the power of individual senators to place holds on individual nominees to block up regulatory appointments. And this is important because there are many agencies where the agency isn't able to engage in regulation if it doesn't have a leader, a head. This is true of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which Richard Corduroy is currently a recess appointee to. It's true of the NLRB and the labor unit. And so the effect of this decision, in tandem with the Republican minorities' use of both the filibuster and the hold power, is to block up the ability of regulatory agencies that deal with consumer finance, that deal with labor relations, that deal with the environment, to get anything done. So the overall effect of this decision is really important with respect to the regulatory state, the ability of President Obama and his agencies below him to impose regulations on business in particular. So the decision is really in keeping with a deregulatory tilt that we've seen over many years on the part of the D.C. Circuit. The decision, I think, is not as important with respect to federal judges. There are instances in which federal judges have been appointed through recess appointees, but no one thinks that recess appointees are a long-term solution to the now 100-plus vacancies that are on the federal bench, and as you say, the sort of asymmetrical limit on Obama in getting his nominees on the bench as opposed to earlier presidents such as President Bush.
But aren't there judicial appointees that have been nominated to the D.C. Circuit Court, which would balance it a little, that have been blocked by filibusters?
Absolutely. The most important of these is a woman called Caitlin Flanagan, who was the Solicitor General of New York State. And she has been filibustered by the Republicans, including members of the Republican Party who were members of the Gang of 14. If you cast your mind back a few years, there was a deal made within the Senate not to filibuster nominations of President Bush. And this was a bipartisan deal, and several of the Republican members of that gang have voted to filibuster a number of President Obama's candidates, including Caitlin Flanagan, including Goodwin Liu, who's a really superb judge who now sits on the California State High Court. And the reasons that are given for these filibusters are, well, you know, these are people who are quote-unquote too extreme, right? And with Flanagan in particular, I think what's driving the opposition is the fact that she, as Solicitor General in New York, had a role on gun regulation policy. And so the NRA in particular has been really vocal in pushing against her nomination. And this is again part of this deregulatory tilt or deregulatory agenda that's going on. The NRA has also been very successful at ensuring that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms does not have a permanent director, right? And without a permanent director, it's hard for it to get things done, right? So I think that the most useful way of thinking about this is this is a decision that, in tandem with what's going on in the courts, in tandem with what's going on in terms of sort of blocking up the Senate, is making it really hard for the president to regulate industry. And so it is benefiting primarily big business at the cost of, and I would include in that gun manufacturers, at the cost of the dispersed public.
Again, I'm speaking with Aziz Haque, who's a professor of law at the University of Chicago. He's a former clerk for Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the Supreme Court and is the co-author of Unchecked and Unbalanced Presidential Power in a Time of Terror. Now, there's no secret that the Republicans don't like the National Labor Relations Board, and they did everything they could to stop and frustrate the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from being born, they held up the appointment of a leader to that, Richard Cordray, and so they found another way, it looks like, to get around it, in this case through the judiciary. And the judiciary and Republican political operatives aren't supposed to work hand in hand, but it's starting to look that way. And my question is a broader question about American democracy. We just had a president who won handily, 5 million ahead in the popular vote, enormous victory in the Electoral College. And his agenda is being blocked and stopped. And this has been the case for some time through the use of the filibuster. But now they, on top of the legislative trickery involved in hobbling these agencies, now the courts have handed the Republicans a gift here, and it seems to strike at the heart of democracy that, you know, we elect governments by popular will, and if through all kinds of ruses the opposition can limit this government's ability to govern, then what does that say about our democracy?
Well, I have to be a little careful here, Ian, otherwise you'll accuse me of hypocrisy, because what you're describing is really the operation of our system of fragmented power, our system of checks and balances, where even if you get a thumping majority in the Electoral College, nonetheless, that doesn't mean that your party will prevail in the same way in the House and the Senate, and certainly not in the court. So what we're seeing is really a friction imposed upon policy change by our separation of powers. And sometimes that's a good thing, in my view, and sometimes I think it leads to outcomes that I personally don't like. And I get, you know, I'll put my cards on the table. I don't like the sort of the delay and or the breaking of President Obama's regulatory agenda here. With respect to the courts, both Republicans and Democrats have used the courts as a tool in to advance policy agendas over time, and this was true, for example, in the civil rights era, where the courts were instrumental in pushing against Jim Crow. It was true in the 80s when the courts, increasingly staffed by Republicans, were instrumental in pushing back on the Great Society and other kinds of regulation. It was certainly true in the context of the healthcare decision from last year, where, to pick up on something else you said, the Supreme Court's decision and the way that it talks about the individual mandate in the Health Care Act really picked up on the arguments made by political operatives in the year or two since the health care law was passed. Rather than drawing upon ideas or resources or precedent that were in the constitutional case law, you really saw the conservative members of the court picking up on basically the Tea Party's arguments. And I don't think that there's anything new about the idea that the court the behavior of the court is going to reflect and resonate the behavior of political actors. What I think is new here is that, or what I think is especially striking here is that the Republican Party has been incredibly successful in identifying an ideology that they want in judges, getting getting judges with that ideology appointed, and then banging the drum of judicial activism against views they don't like, and blocking candidates that President Obama has put forward, even when they are, as in I think Flanagan and Liu's case, quite moderate. So it's a stunning piece of hypocrisy and self-serving political framing that I think the Obama administration can be fairly faulted for utterly failing to respond to.
Well, that, I think, is the real question is, Aziz Haq, is I don't know what the figures are, but my understanding is the judiciary, because the Republicans have been so successful at pushing through their nominees, and as you mentioned, the deal that was done a few years back during the Bush administration, no such deal has been done in to accommodate the Democrats or this particular president. He hasn't been able to get hundreds of his nominees for the federal bench are sitting there. So you end up with a highly slanted federal bench that, not surprisingly, comes up with decisions like this decision from the D.C. Circuit Court, which is completely dominated by conservatives because the liberal judges that have been nominated simply don't even get a hearing. So it seems
I think and I think it's slanted, just to pick up on one thing you said, in two really different and important ways. The first thing is that the rate at which Obama has been able to get his nominees appointed has been lower than even during President Bush. I think it's around 75%. So it's not, you know, we're not talking nobody gets nominated. But a lot of that 75% is fairly uncontroversial trial court judges. It's the really controversial Court of Appeals judges who tend to get filibustered or blocked. So that's one thing. Then there's a separate point, which is that if you look at the behavior of Republican-appointed judges, I think it is fair to say that they have been more aggressive and innovative on issues like the First Amendment, on issues like campaign finance reform, on issues like the Second Amendment, on issues like the power of the president, on issues like extirpating the relevance of international law in constraining U.S. Detention policy. Republican judges tend to be innovative and activist, and the Democratic judges who get appointed, I think it is fair to say, are much more moderate, right? So it's not just that there's simply more Republican-appointed than Democrat-appointed judges on the court. I think it is fair to say that the Republican judges have this fighting spirit about them, and the Democrats tend to be, well, rather milquwater.
But that's a result of moving the goalposts to the right, right? If you can only get a judge on the Democratic side, even to a hearing because of Republican pressure, nobody but a milquetoast Democrat's ever going to get that far, right? Isn't that how the system works now?
I think that's absolutely right. But I think that we ought not to omit the White House, the Obama White House, from the responsibility for this situation. I think that if you look at the way that the Obama administration has placed political capital, how it's distributed its political capital, how it has prioritized judges, it has simply not put much heft behind judges, even though there are factions, interest groups within the Democratic Party coalition who care deeply about judges. I mean, look at the activism and interest and passion with respect to the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, right? This is the who judges are matters a great deal. Part of this, I think, goes back to Obama's sort of basic political philosophy as revealed in his two autobiographies, which in those books he says, look, I don't think judges are that important for American social change. Now, there's something to be said for that, but surely if the healthcare debacle, the litigation in the courts, has taught him something, it's got to be that even if federal judges don't drive social and policy change, they sure as heck can stand in its way. And that's right. What's going on, and that's why the appointment process matters.
Well, if you didn't get a wake-up call from the healthcare bill that he thought actually the Supreme Court was going to strike it down, apparently, what just happened to him in terms of recess appointments should certainly get his attention. And I thank you for joining us, Aziz Haq.
No, thank you for having me on the show.
Again, I've been speaking with Aziz Haq. He's a professor of law at the University of Chicago. He's a former clerk for Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the Supreme Court and is the co-author of Unchecked and Unbalanced, Presidential Power in a Time of Terror. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a Senate veteran about what kind of filibuster reform we can expect.